Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bow 231. Bow 231. Not being picked up really well. Bow 231.
Uh-oh. Let me turn the volume down. Hold on.
Let me see what happened. Maybe I pulled out the mic. Is that green? Says it's okay. Test. Woo. Well, maybe somebody just turned the level way down in another part of the machine. All right, so this, there it is. Bio 231. It is March 16th. We're going to do endocrine chapter today. And here is the sign-in sheet. So go ahead, start passing that around. Last time you had a test, and they're graded. Your grades are in Blackboard. You'll review your Scantrons in lab. And if you can't wait until Monday, I have office hours tomorrow from 9 to 11:30, so you can check it out then, if you wish. All right, so today's lab is muscles of the lower appendage, which is what you guys are going to do on Monday. All right, so endocrine chapter for today. That's chapter 17. Okay, endocrine system. It's composed of glands. Oh, I missed the sign-in sheet for you. You'll catch it when it comes back around. Okay. Endocrine gland. Remember, there's two general kinds of glands. There's endocrine glands and exocrine glands. Yeah, we studied that when we looked at the tissues in the body. And what are the four major kinds of tissues you got? You got muscle. You've got... Well, skeletal is a kind of muscle, so we're staying more general. So muscle is a kind of tissue. What's another kind of tissue? Adipose is a kind of, it's a specific kind of a more general kind. So I want to know the four general kinds. I heard epithelium. This is like an auction. Epithelium, muscle, what else? Connective tissue, which adipose tissue is a connective tissue, and nervous tissue. Yeah, those are the four basic kinds of tissues. All right, so when we look at tissues, we said that there is one that primarily forms glands. Of those four, which one primarily forms glands? It is epithelium. Epithelium is usually what forms glands. Okay, and then we also realize that there's two major kinds of glands that come from epithelium. One is endocrine. The second kind is exocrine. So they're endocrine and exocrine glands. I'll mispronounce it a little bit so that you can understand what I'm saying. Endocrine and exocrine. And one has ducts and the other does not have a duct. So a gland is something that secretes a product outside of itself, and then that product is used maybe as a signaling compound or has other purposes in the body, maybe for digesting food that you eat. All right, so you should pick one of those kinds of glands has a duct and the other kind does not have a duct. Which one has a duct? It is an exocrine gland. Exocrine gland has a duct, so the product of those cells secrete a substance into a duct, and that duct carries it to where it will have its function in the body, like digestive enzymes that the pancreas makes. The pancreas doesn't secrete those digestive enzymes inside of itself, because what would happen to the pancreas if it did? It would get digested. And then you wouldn't have a pancreas anymore. Plus, you'd have a big bleeding mess right there instead, right? So those digestive enzymes are secreted into a duct, and the duct carries it to your digestive tract where they do their job and don't harm any other organs. Endocrine glands, on the other hand, don't have a duct. So if you don't have a duct transporting those chemicals around in your body, how do they get around in your body? What does get around everywhere in your body? It is a connective tissue in particular that I'm thinking of, which is the blood. That's right, because blood is a fluid connective tissue. It flows through your whole body. So an endocrine gland secretes its product into the interstitial space, and then a capillary absorbs that material, and it's transported everywhere in the body. So that's why an endocrine gland can be a ductless gland. It doesn't need a duct because you have a circulatory system. Okay, so endocrine system is composed of ductless glands that secrete hormones or signaling messenger molecules. All right, so the purpose of the endocrine system is to help control your body, to coordinate, make sure it's all functioning together. And it's a slow form of communication. For instance, if you want to communicate very rapidly from one part of the body to another, like if you see a car coming right at you, what would you want to do? Get out of the way in 5-10 minutes? Or would you like to jump out of the way in a hurry? Jump out of the way in a hurry. And in order for you to jump out of the way in a hurry, you need a nervous system to do that, to stimulate skeletal muscles. All right? Okay, so endocrine system would not work because it's slow. But there are many processes that are slow in your body that need constant regulation, but it can happen very slowly. And that's what the endocrine system is for. It's for regulating things constantly, okay, but it can be at a slower pace. So here is a good definition of a hormone, because a ductless gland secretes a hormone. So a hormone only comes from an endocrine gland. It's a compound, it's a signaling molecule that's secreted by an endocrine gland, but that's kind of, that has a loaded meaning. What does an endocrine gland mean? What kind of gland is that? It's ductless, right? And so it's secreted directly into the circulation, where it travels to a distant target tissue, some far distant spot in your body, and when it gets there, it elicits a specific response. So it's going to tell that tissue to change its physiology, to do something different. All right? And a target tissue, in order to respond to a hormone, it has to have a receptor to that hormone. Otherwise, it's going to be completely blind to it. That hormone won't have any effect on that tissue. So there are many more tissues that don't respond to hormones because they don't have what? A receptor. It has to have a specific receptor for that particular hormone. All right, so what about the functions? Well, it's important for regulating, but processes that are relatively slow as compared to processes that are relatively fast. So processes that are fast are regulated by what part of your body? The nervous system. Things that are much slower are regulated by the endocrine system, like growth and metabolism. Right, there's something else that happens here too. These processes happen 24 hours a day. So these are continuous processes, but they're slow. Reproductive system, right, is regulated by the endocrine system. Blood chemistry and even immune response is regulated by the endocrine system. So now let's look at some glands. Where are the major endocrine glands? So we see that on the JPEG over here on the right-hand side. So here's a list of organs. Pituitary gland, all right, is, maybe you remember the sphenoid bone. There is a little depression in the sphenoid bone called the sella turcica. That's where the pituitary gland is, right here. So it's right at the base of the brain. The pineal gland is a little bit higher in the brain, but it's still part of the brain, right there. I think I have a nice picture of some of this. Oh yeah, this is a little bit better picture of the brain. So here is the, here's a sphenoid paranasal sinus, right above the roof of the mouth. Here's the sella turcica, and here is the pituitary gland. Now when you look at this pituitary gland right here, how many colors do you see? There are two. So there are two major parts of the pituitary gland that we're going to look at. One is anterior, the other is the posterior part. Here is the pineal gland, right up over here. All right, so these are parts of the brain. I'm going to skip down just a little bit to number 10, hypothalamus. Since we haven't studied the brain just yet, here is the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is just superior to the pituitary gland. So here is the hypothalamus. And what else did I want to show you? So hypothalamus, pituitary, and pineal gland that are in the brain. That's probably pretty good for now. What are some other things that we want to look at? So we've done covering these. Thyroid gland, anterior neck, right here. There are some other glands that are embedded in the thyroid gland. We call those the parathyroid glands. They're located on either side, either the right or left lobe of the thyroid gland. So there's two glands in this area. Here's the thymus. Who can tell me what cavity is the thymus in? It's in the, thoracic cavity is right. What's a smaller cavity? Mediastinum. Yeah, remember that one, mediastinum, because it's in that cavity right smack in the middle, right? Right above your heart, right above the pericardial cavity. All right, and then here are some kidneys, right? Maybe you would have recognized those without taking an anatomy class. Here are the kidneys, but more importantly, here are some glands that are right above the kidneys. So sometimes we call these the suprarenal glands or adrenal glands, meaning right above the kidneys. Whenever you hear that term renal, you should think of kidney, and above the kidneys are the adrenal glands, and you see them located bilaterally right here. In the abdominal cavity, there's the pancreas. The pancreas is kind of interesting because it's part endocrine gland, part exocrine gland, meaning that it secretes hormones, that's the endocrine part, and the exocrine part secretes digestive enzymes, which eventually end up in your digestive tract. How do those digestive enzymes get from the pancreas to the digestive system? Since it's an exocrine gland, it has what? It has a duct. So these things take a duct. They travel via a duct into the digestive system. Okay, and then lastly, we have some gonads. And there's two different kinds of gonads. Why are there two different kinds of gonads? But not everybody has both kinds. Because there are boys and girls, right? Males and females. So males have testes and females have ovaries. So those are what we call gonads. Sometimes we call them orchids. And so these are just reproductive structures. One of the jobs of gonads is to secrete hormones. The other job is to produce something we call gametes or sex cells. And what is the male gamete? You've maybe not thought about it in that way or heard that term before, but what is a male gamete? Is a sperm, and a female gamete is an egg or oocyte. Right? Egg or oocyte. So that's what a gamete is, or a sex cell. A little bit different than a typical kind of cell in your body. All right, so those are the major endocrine organs, where they're located in your body, but there are other organs that secrete hormones as well, to some degree. They're very important in your body, but we don't generally consider them part of the endocrine system, but we should. We should broaden our horizons, right? The heart, it acts like an endocrine gland. The digestive tract also secretes hormones. The kidneys and the skin does as well. All right, so all of these things can act as endocrine systems. So most glands are made out of epithelium. Okay, so that's a pretty good basic understanding, but some endocrine glands are derived from neurons. Like we looked at all those different parts of the brain, that is nervous tissue. Some muscle cells, like give me an example of a muscle cell that secretes a hormone. Cardiac muscle, because we have the heart right here, right? And also some fibroblast-like cells. So not only does epithelium, but the other general classes of tissues in your body secrete hormones as well. Right? So nervous tissue, muscle tissue, and connective tissues do secrete hormones, but typically when we think of a gland, an endocrine gland, we think of epithelium. By far, most is epithelium in origin. Okay, hormones can have a couple different kinds of classes. Some are made from proteins or peptides, modified proteins and peptides, and a building block of a peptide is amino acid, right? So some are amino acid based. These dissolve in water very easily, transported in the blood. Another class of hormones are steroid hormones, and these are lipids. They're more like oily compounds. They're derived from cholesterol. And what can you tell me about oil and water? They don't mix. They have opposite kinds of physical properties. So steroids have different kinds of actions in your body, maybe a little bit more longer lived than amino acid steroid hormones. In order for them to dissolve in your blood, there usually has to be carrier proteins. And how they work in the cell is a lot different too. So these are just some of the things you get to look forward to when you take a physiology class that's a little bit more comprehensive in the actions of these different kinds of hormones. But if the structure is different, right, so the amino acid has a different structure than the steroid, what can you tell me about its functions? It's going to be a lot different, right? So that's why we like to break it down into these two different kinds. Okay, let's talk about the secretion of hormones and how it maintains control. There are a couple of different kinds of mechanisms that maintain control in your body. So here we see a nice PowerPoint slide that illustrates that. There's something called humoral secretion. And that's when a hormone is secreted by an endocrine gland So in particular, here we see a thyroid gland, which is in your anterior neck, and embedded in the thyroid gland are these parathyroid glands. They secrete something called parathyroid hormone. And the parathyroid glands right here are always measuring calcium levels. That's an ion. So the electrolyte calcium that's in your blood, because blood is flowing everywhere in this gland. And when calcium levels are low in your blood, the parathyroid hormone releases parathyroid hormone, which then goes to bones to demineralize bone, and then the bones release calcium into the blood. And then what happens to blood calcium levels? What was the initial stimulus right here? It was low calcium, but because of the parathyroid hormones, when calcium is low, how does your body react? By releasing calcium from bones into the blood. And so what happens to this stimulus right here? It was low, but what happens to it? It goes back up to a normal level, right? So that's a very interesting control mechanism that you're going to look at a lot in a physiology class, right? So hormones will help maintain health in your body by getting rid of abnormal deviations of chemical compounds in your body, for instance. All right, so this is humoral because the parathyroid gland just looks at the level of calcium in your blood. There are other kinds of humoral secretions, like in the pancreas. It's going to be looking at glucose concentration in the blood and taking different actions to maintain glucose within a normal range, blood glucose concentration in the blood in order to maintain life. All right, so that would be another example of humoral stimulus. Neural stimulus. All right, for instance, here is the gland that sits on top of the kidneys. And what did we call that? Adrenal gland. It could also be called the suprarenal gland. And when we look at this adrenal gland, I see one part right here that's very superficial, and then I see another part, right, that looks different, that is deep. And I think we talked about this in terms of bone already. And I said many organs have one kind of structure that's superficial and a different kind of structure that's deep, right? And bone is like that. Cortical bone is superficial. Medullary bone is deep, right? So here we have the adrenal gland, and it's got two parts, sort of like bone. What do we call the superficial part on bone? That's what we're going to call the superficial part of this adrenal gland. This is the cortex. And the deep part is the medulla, and it's radically different from each other. They're both endocrine glands, but they do two totally different kinds of things. But in terms of neural stimulus, that is where a nerve impulse goes to an endocrine gland and directly stimulates these cells electrically for them to release its hormone product. And since it's a hormone, where does it go then? It's got to go into the blood. And then it's delivered everywhere in the body. Just like this parathyroid hormone, once it's secreted by the parathyroid glands, it gets picked up by a capillary and then delivered everywhere in the body. Okay, so it's the same kind of motif, but the stimulus is different. This is due to a level of a compound circulating in the blood. Release for neural stimulus is due to a neural stimulus reaching these cells right here. And the third kind is hormone stimulus or hormonal stimulus, where a hormone that's in the blood, okay, diffuses out of the blood to an endocrine gland, and then it stimulates this endocrine gland to release a second hormone. Right? And when it does, that second hormone then is picked up by the blood, carried everywhere in the body, including what? The thyroid gland, adrenal cortex, for instance, and a gonad, and then it will stimulate further, it can stimulate these endocrine glands to release other hormones into the blood. So here is example of a hormone causing the release of another hormone, which is even causing the release of another hormone, right? So that's a hormonal stimulus. So those are three kinds, humoral, neural, and hormonal. All right, so let's talk in particular of some of these glands. So I've kind of boiled it down to some specific functions, but we do have to look at the pituitary with just a little bit more anatomy that's involved right here. All right, so here is, anybody remember what bone this is? So here's the pituitary, and you can see it has two different parts. So what bone is this? That's a sphenoid, and here is that fossa in the sphenoid, but since it's so important, since it holds the pituitary, we give it a special name. a more descriptive name. It describes more what it really looks like. It looks like a Turkish riding saddle. So that is the sella turcica right in the sphenoid bone. Okay, so you see the two major parts of the pituitary. Here is the anterior pituitary, and then here is the posterior pituitary. And it's connected to this part of the brain right here that we call the hypothalamus. And indeed, the hypothalamus controls secretion of hormones from the pituitary gland. And furthermore, this anterior lobe can be broken down into this part that's up in the stalk, or that little connection between the hypothalamus and the pituitary. This is what we call the pars tuberalis. And then there's a little intermediate part right here we call the pars intermedia. And the major part of the anterior lobe is called the pars distalis. So those are the three parts of the anterior pituitary. And the posterior pituitary has only got two parts. It's got infundibulum and the pars nervosa right here. The pituitary gland is an exception to the rule that says that only epithelial tissues makes glands, endocrine glands. Because we see it has two different parts, it has two different natures. This anterior lobe right here really originates from epithelium, but the posterior lobe right here, where do you see that it's the color is continuous with? It's continuous with the brain and hypothalamus. So the posterior pituitary is really part of the brain or nervous tissue, right? So that just kind of underscores that there are exceptions to a lot of rules, including where glandular tissue comes from. So posterior lobe is nervous tissue in origin, but the anterior lobe is epithelium in origin. Okay, so another name for the anterior lobe right here is adenohypophysis. What does hypo mean? Like hypodermic. What does that mean to you? Something below, okay? And so hypophysis is just meaning below the hypothalamus, right? And adeno, whenever you hear that term like adenocarcinoma maybe, unfortunately you've had some people diagnosed with that, that means that it's a cancer of a gland of some kind, right? So adenohypophysis just means that it comes from epithelium, and the neurohypophysis really originates from nervous tissue, and you can see it connecting to the brain right here. Okay, so those are the two major parts of the pituitary gland. So let's look at hormones that come from the anterior pituitary. And we got about 9 of them. All right, so you should be familiar with some of these and be familiar with the acronyms. So the anterior lobe secretes these hormones over here, growth hormone, otherwise abbreviated GH. Some people still call it somatotropin or somatotropic hormone. I don't really hear that too often, but you might hear that sooner or later. But GH is how I refer to it. Growth hormone stimulates body growth, right? That's probably not too shocking. By stimulating protein synthesis, protein production, and also growth of bone. So it's very important for actually growing bones, especially in length. What part of a bone does a bone grow in length from? This is kind of a blast from the past. Yeah, the epiphyseal plates, right? That's where a bone grows in length from it, at least in long bones. All right, then there is thyroid-stimulating hormone released from what gland? Where does thyroid-stimulating hormone come from? The anterior pituitary, because that's what we're talking about, right? But I just wanted to make sure you're not forgetting the big picture. And so thyroid-stimulating hormone released by the anterior pituitary goes to the thyroid gland. How does it go to the thyroid gland? Does it go through a duct? No, it's an endocrine gland, so it goes through the circulatory system. Yeah, so it goes to the thyroid gland and it stimulates the thyroid gland. And what does that thyroid gland have to have in order to be stimulated by thyroid stimulating hormone? It's got to have a receptor to it, otherwise it's completely blind to that signal. Doesn't know it's there. All right, another hormone, adrenal corticotropic hormone. We just call it ACTH, but it's good to know the name because the name describes where does it go. It's released by what? The anterior pituitary. And since it's an endocrine gland, it goes into the blood. And what target tissue has receptors, or what kind of tissue has a receptor to ACTH that makes it a target tissue? It is the adrenal gland, but what part of the adrenal gland? The cortex, See, that's in the name. So you don't always have to memorize these things. So it goes to the adrenal cortex and stimulates the cortex to secrete other hormones that help you cope with stress, stressful circumstances. All right, there's another hormone from the anterior pituitary called melanocyte-stimulating hormone. And this is, in humans, involved with regulating appetite. And when levels increase, it can suppress appetite. All right, so that's sort of interesting. And then we have two gonadotropins. What's a gonad again? Ah, I forgot. What's a gonad? It's either a testes or an ovary. Okay, and they're located in different parts, right? The female gonad is in the pelvic cavity, male gonad is outside the pelvic cavity in the scrotum, two different locations. But these gonadotropins released by the anterior pituitary still can go to those gonads via what? The circulatory system, because blood goes everywhere. Okay. So the two kinds of gonadotropins, it means that these are hormones that stimulate either the ovaries or the testes. We got a couple different kinds, right, because we got two different sexes. In the male, we have something called follicle-stimulating hormone. Oh, where does that follicle-stimulating hormone come from? What gland releases it or secretes it? It is? Aha, we're still talking about this anterior pituitary. So anterior pituitary is releasing follicle-stimulating hormone. That's one of two gonadotropins. In the male, it increases or stimulates spermatogenesis, right? And a sperm is what? A male gamete, all right? So you could say sperm production. So FSH stimulates sperm production. In the female, what's the gamete in the female? It's an oocyte or an egg. FSH then stimulates the release of a mature oocyte in the female. So and the oocyte comes from a follicle. So FSH in the female causes follicle development during the monthly cycle that a reproductive female is going through. Right? So development and maturation for ovulation. Okay, the second kind of gonadotropin. Now this luteinizing hormone, where does luteinizing hormone come from? Anterior pituitary right here. Okay, or you could call that the adenyl hypothesis if you wanted to. In the male, luteinizing hormone stimulates the production of testosterone and secretion. All right, so testosterone is another hormone that we're going to look at in a little bit, but it's a steroid kind of hormone. It produces, one of the jobs is to produce male sex characteristics. Anybody know what a male sex characteristic is? Is what? Is it a Y? That's the chromosome. Okay, so you need to have that Y chromosome in order to secrete, okay, testosterone. All right, so that's the chromosome. You got to have that blueprint in order to become a male. And once you're a male, you have a male gonad that can secrete testosterone. But what are some ways that males are different than females? How about voice? Yeah, voice is what? A little bit higher pitch? No. A lot lower because the larynx is bigger. This part of that Adam's apple is bigger, so it resonates at a little bit lower frequency. What about muscle mass? Muscles typically have a little bit more muscle mass. Bigger bones, typically, right? So those are what we call secondary sex characteristics. More hair over more of your body, and that hair is typically coarser, right? And skin is a little bit thicker, a little bit rougher. So those are some male sex characteristics that are produced via testosterone. All right, but now luteinizing hormone, oh, where does that come from again? Anterior pituitary. Okay, and don't forget, that's a gonadotropin. In the female, that luteinizing hormone from the anterior pituitary goes to the ovary via the cardiovascular system, and it causes ovulation. That causes the ovulation of a mature oocyte from a follicle or an oocyte from a mature follicle. And it also causes the release of estrogen and progesterone. So these are female sex hormones. These are steroids. So these take the place of testosterone in the male. All right, testosterone, kind of the analog in the female is estrogen, but males really don't have an analog of progesterone. And the reason why that is because males don't get pregnant. When we look at the very last chapter in the book, we'll see what the really good purpose of progesterone is, but It's kind of embedded in the name right here. I could give you a little foreshadowing. What does gestation mean? What does gestation mean? That is the term of pregnancy, right? That's when a person is pregnant and the embryo is developing right inside their uterus. That's gestation. So progesterone is just kind of a short form for progestational hormone. So here's a hormone that supports what kind of process? Gestation, yeah, or pregnancy. And since males don't get pregnant, they don't need progesterone. But females do. Okay. All right, and so those are gonadotropins that support those processes that come from the anterior pituitary. And then lastly, we see prolactin. Prolactin is released from the anterior pituitary, goes to the breast, and it stimulates development of breast glandular tissue. And what does breast glandular tissue do? And what kind of gland is it? It's an exocrine gland because it produces milk, right, which nourishes infants, and that goes through a duct system to the outside world, right? So it's not an endocrine gland. The breast is an exocrine gland. And it those that breast tissue is developed, okay, during pregnancy and after pregnancy by prolactin. Okay, so those are six hormones. We got to consider, how many did we say altogether there were?
Nine.
There were nine. And how many did we talk about already? Six. Aha, but I tricked you a little bit because gonadotropins really contain two kinds. So we've actually talked about seven, right? So seven come from the anterior pituitary. Sometimes we lump FSH and LH together as gonadotropins. Okay. Okay, so we're going to talk about two more, and guess where these last two come from? The posterior pituitary. So we're going to get there in a second. Let's talk about the control release of hormones from this anterior pituitary. And remember, there were how many different kinds of stimulus mechanisms? There were three. There was humoral, there was hormonal, and then nervous, right? So the mechanism for release of all of these anterior pituitary hormones is hormonal. They're going to be released as a result of hormones reaching the anterior pituitary from other parts of the body, and in particular the hypothalamus, which is right next door. So it's not a really far way to travel. So how do hormones from the hypothalamus, right, get to the anterior pituitary? How does a hormone get anywhere? It has to travel through, it's got to travel through the blood. So there has to be vasculature that connects the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary. All right, so we're going to look at that. Okay, so the hypothalamus controls secretion of anterior lobe hormones because the hypothalamus can secrete releasing hormones if it's going to stimulate the release of hormones from the anterior pituitary, or inhibiting hormones if the hypothalamus is going to turn off secretion of any of the above hormones that we were looking at. So that is some important and interesting anatomy that you should be aware of. All right, so here's the hypothalamus, and then underneath we've got the pituitary. And what's in between the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland? We've got the infundibulum right here, right? Or sometimes we call it the stalk of the pituitary. Well, the hypothalamus is part of the brain, so the brain has neurons or nervous tissue, and they receive signals from all over the place. They integrate that information up, and then they send electrical impulses down to about this area right here. And these neurons then release hormones, but since it's coming from a neuron, sometimes we call those neurohormones because they're coming from a neuron. But they're still hormones because how do they get to the anterior pituitary? Via this blood system. So there's a capillary network which picks up those chemical messengers. They travel through these couple little blood vessels right here, the hypophyseal portal veins, right? Hypophysis is just another name for this pituitary. And the blood carries it. Where does it go? Where does the blood go from this capillary bed right here? You see it going to the anterior pituitary, not the posterior pituitary. And then it bumps into another capillary network or plexus right here. Those releasing or inhibiting hormones then diffuse out of the blood and can directly stimulate the cells of the anterior pituitary, causing them to release what? their particular hormones, like gonadotropins, FSH and LH, or thyroid-stimulating hormone, or adrenal corticotropic hormone, or what's this? Growth hormone, or what's PRL? Prolactin, right, that goes to the breast, that stimulates breast tissue. So all of this, all of these hormones that are controlling, like PRL, controlling the breast, comes from control within the brain as a result of that. So this is an example of hormonal control. Okay, now I don't have any of the names of these hormones in lists for you to know, but it's not really too terribly difficult to know what some of these names are. All right, so we've got right here kind of like the hypothalamus, right here. And so there's a pituitary down over here, right? And the pituitary's got like two parts. This part is what? The anterior pituitary. Here's the posterior pituitary. So the hypothalamus, for instance, if it wants to cause the anterior pituitary to increase secretion of thyroid-stimulating hormone, okay, the hypothalamus then releases something called TSH releasing hormone, RH. And then how does TSH-RH get into the anterior pituitary? Via this little blood vessel right here, okay, that we call the hypophyseal portal vein. Right there, hypophyseal portal vein. All right, so capillaries pick up TSH-RH, deliver it to the anterior pituitary, diffuses out of more capillaries. Anterior pituitary then releases thyroid-stimulating hormone, which then makes the thyroid gland happy. All right, so that's one example. What about, what did we call FSH and LH? What are they really called if we group them together? Gonadotropins, FSH and LH. Sometimes we abbreviate gonadotropins with a big G and a little N standing for gonadotropin. Okay, but you should remember gonadotropins are really what? FSH and LH. All right, so how does the anterior pituitary know to release gonadotropins here? Because the hypothalamus is going to put into this portal vessel something called GN, what? RH, releasing hormone. Okay, and that's going to cause the anterior pituitary to release gonadotropins. All right, let's do one more. How about anterior pituitary? Do I have this right? Does the anterior pituitary release ACTH? Okay, I like your answer. I heard yes. Now here's a quiz. What does ACTH stand for? Adrenal corticotropic hormone. So this goes to the adrenal cortex and then will stimulate and maintain the adrenal cortex. How does the anterior pituitary know to release ACTH? Because the hypothalamus is going to release ACTH what? RH. Okay, so you kind of get the scheme, the flow of how that works. And then ACTH, RH goes through the portal vessel to the anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary releases ACTH, which goes to the adrenal cortex. Make sure it's happy. Okay, so that's what we mean by releasing hormones. Or they could be inhibitory hormones if the hypothalamus wants to curtail the secretion from the anterior pituitary. All right, so here is the portal vessel. Portal blood vessel. So it goes by the circulatory system. So since these compounds use the circulatory system to get to the anterior pituitary, what are these compounds right here? These are hormones. Right? And the hypothalamus is a ductless gland because it uses the cardiovascular system to get those hormones to the anterior pituitary. Okay, that's one way that it works. All right, that's how the anterior pituitary is controlled. All right, so now let's shift our focus a little bit and talk about the posterior pituitary right here. Let me see what kind of slides I got for posterior pituitary. That's not bad, but we saw that already. Okay, here's the posterior pituitary. Now, we said that the anterior pituitary really came from epithelium. What about the posterior pituitary? It's really an extension of what? The brain. So it's really made more of nervous tissue. So here are some neurons, and we can see some part of them in the brain, and then they have these long processes that we call axons that move through the infundibulum, that's the connecting stalk, down into the posterior pituitary. And there are two sets of these neurons, and you can kind of see a blue and what's this other color right here? Like a green. Okay, so these are two different areas in the brain. And so, how many hormones are left to describe from the pituitary? Two, right? And they come from these two different areas right here. And I think I want you to know the names of these hormones, not necessarily where they come from at this point in the class, okay? And the two hormones are oxytocin and antidiuretic hormone. Now, these two are secreted by these neurons, but not up here in the hypothalamus and then get carried to the posterior pituitary. These parts of the neurons actually grow down into the posterior pituitary, so when they get stimulated to conduct electrical impulses, when those impulses get to the ends of these neurons, the neurons release these compounds directly. All right, so this is an example of what? Neuronal stimulation of release of hormones. And since oxytocin and ADH are released from these neurons, sometimes we call these neurohormones, right? Because they're released by nervous tissue. But nonetheless, since they're hormones, how do they get delivered to their target tissues? Is there a duct that carries them? No. Since they're hormones, they come from an endocrine gland. They're carried by the blood to their particular target tissues. And then those target tissues, if they are a target tissue, they have to have a receptor for either oxytocin or antidiuretic hormone. And so this thing right here is what we call the hypothalamic hypophyseal tract. So a tract is different than a portal blood vessel, right? A tract is just nervous tissue. A portal blood vessel carries blood. Two totally different things. Okay, so don't forget, posterior lobe is actually part of the brain. Axons make up that hypothalamic or hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract, which carries nerve impulses to the posterior pituitary. And when those impulses reach the posterior pituitary, it releases these two hormones, ADH and oxytocin. Do I have in your list what these things are? I do. Good thing. Okay, so let's talk about what these two hormones do. What does a diuretic do? It makes you pee. Right? Makes you lose fluid from your body because it just makes you pee. So what does antidiuretic hormone do? It stops you from peeing. So where does that fluid stay? It stays inside your body, right? So when you're dehydrated, the hypothalamus realizes that you're dehydrated, releases antidiuretic hormone, and then you, what, retain fluids. So the kidney, what we say, okay, targets the kidneys to resorb water. What that means is that there's a part of the kidney that likes to throw away a lot of water, but if it gets a signal from this posterior lobe of the pituitary, namely antidiuretic hormone, that fluid that will eventually become urine is taken out of those tubes and put back into your blood. So that's what we call reabsorption of water. So you don't lose that fluid in urine. All right, so that hormone is made by, I want to mention this, not that I want you to know the name of this area right here, okay, but I want you to know where these hormones are actually synthesized. Okay, so antidiuretic hormone is actually made in the hypothalamus and then transported down this axon into the posterior pituitary. All right, so it's made in the brain and then transported down. All right, now what about all these hormones from the anterior pituitary? Where are they made? They're actually made by the tissues of the anterior pituitary. They're not made within the hypothalamus and transported down. They're actually made by the anterior pituitary tissue itself. It's just the signal from the hypothalamus causes the release from the anterior pituitary. So the origin of the hormones, where they're made in the anterior pituitary, is different compared to the posterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary, hormones are made right there in that site. Well, where are the hormones made? From the posterior pituitary, from the hypothalamus, right? And then they're carried down into that location. Okay, the second hormone, besides antidiuretic hormone from the posterior pituitary, is what we call oxytocin. And oxytocin is a powerful smooth muscle stimulant. And smooth muscle is one kind of the muscles that you've studied before. What are the three kinds of muscles again, just for fun? You got skeletal, which is controlled by your brain, voluntary control. You got cardiac muscle, okay? And then you got smooth muscle. And that's the one we're really interested in, is the smooth muscle. Can anybody remember where you have smooth muscle at? Like the walls of hollow organs inside your body. Respiratory tract, digestive tract, and reproductive tract, as well as around some of the duct tissues within the breast. All right, so oxytocin causes contraction of those muscles, especially uterine muscles during parturition. So oxytocin is necessary for delivery, but oxytocin also causes contraction of glandular tissue of the breast, which then does what? When the glands of the breast contract, that causes the release of milk. We call that letdown, milk letdown. So oxytocin is necessary for milk letdown. So the pituitary is kind of interesting because it has two effects on the breast of the female. What were the two effects? There's one hormone from the anterior pituitary. What was that?
Prolactin.
And what does prolactin do? It causes the glandular tissue to grow, okay, and become competent to produce milk, all right? But it doesn't cause letdown. The hormone that's necessary for the mature glandular tissue of the breast to actually secrete milk is oxytocin. So there are two important stages for an infant to be nourished. One is the breast has to develop to be able to make milk, but that milk also has to be released, right, when suckling starts. So breast development is controlled by prolactin from the anterior pituitary. Milk letdown during nursing is controlled by oxytocin, which is from the posterior pituitary right here. Okay, so they're related, but a little bit different. So now, how does oxytocin and ADH released by these neurons from the hypothalamus that end up here in the posterior pituitary, how do these hormones get to the kidney? How do they get to the breast? Is it an exocrine gland or an endocrine gland? Endocrine gland, so it always hops a ride through the blood somehow, right? And it just so happens that breast has receptors to oxytocin, right? And does the kidney have receptors for oxytocin? No, it has receptors for antidiuretic hormone, right? So that's how things are controlled. All right, so this area right here, I think by far, when you first start looking at it, is the most complicated. The rest of these endocrine glands probably aren't too complicated to look at. Yes?
So do males not have oxytocin?
Oh, they do produce a little bit. Yeah. And males certainly do have antidiuretic hormone. Oxytocin performs some other functions, especially bonding kinds of behaviors between individuals. So what kind of individuals that you know of are very highly bonded together? Like a mother and their children, okay? And that's because what happens to the mom when an infant starts to nurse? They have this big release of oxytocin, okay, which then provides for the development of that very nice, strong maternal bond. And males, to some degree, also have that as well, okay? But through obviously a little bit different mechanism. Okay. Thyroid gland. Where's that thyroid gland located at? I don't know if I have any more pictures to show you. Thyroid gland. Oh, I do have some more pictures. Thyroid gland. It's in your neck. Anterior neck right here. Kind of looks like a butterfly. This narrowing is what we call an isthmus. You're going to see that term in a couple other places. An isthmus is just a narrowing between two structures. So here's the thyroid gland. And it's the largest pure endocrine gland. Like the pituitary is very small, hypothalamus is very small. The pancreas is very large, but it's just not an endocrine gland. It has other glands associated with it, like exocrine glands. So the thyroid is the largest 100% endocrine gland. It produces two hormones, thyroid hormone, which regulates metabolism. It controls your basal metabolic rate. So if you don't have thyroid hormone, you're very lethargic. And it also helps regulation of growth to some degree. Okay, so if you're hypothyroid, you're very lethargic. If you're hyperthyroid, you're what? You're kind of agitated. You're very busy all the time. All right, the second kind of hormone is called calcitonin. And calcitonin is involved with, and it's in the name right here, it helps regulate an ion. Guess what ion? It's in the name. Calcium. Okay. All right, so calcitonin decreases the blood concentration of calcium. When does the thyroid gland release calcitonin? Because it's always measuring calcium in the blood. When does the thyroid release calcitonin? When blood calcium is high or when it's low? Okay, it releases it when it's high because the signal causes blood calcium to do what? To decrease. Okay, but we also talked about a hormone, right here, all right, that is released when blood calcium is low. And that's the next hormone. Okay, parathyroid hormone increases when blood concentration is low. So here you have two hormones, calcitonin and parathyroid hormone. One causes an increase of blood calcium, the other causes a decrease. That seems kind of confusing. But what can you tell me about the biceps brachii and the triceps brachii? What's their relationship? Antagonistic. And is that a really good thing? Absolutely. If you want to have precise control and balance of your hand, you need to have those antagonistic muscles, just like you need a gas pedal and a brake pedal in a car to control your car. All right? Your body needs these two hormones to have precise control of what ion in your blood? Calcium. It's very important. And we're going to learn some reasons why calcium levels have to be maintained within just a certain narrow range in order for you to be healthy. And it's maintained that way by calcitonin and parathyroid working against each other to maintain calcium levels, blood levels, in just the right region. Okay. So those are, and remember those parathyroid glands were in the thyroid. Maybe I didn't show you this slide. So here is the posterior view of the thyroid. Here are four little nodules right here. We call these the parathyroid glands that release what? Parathyroid hormone. And parathyroid hormone increases blood concentration of calcium. Oh, where's a good place to go get calcium if your blood calcium is low?
Bones.
That's right. Your bones is the reservoir for calcium. Okay. It's a perfect place to go. Okay. That signal comes from these four little glands right here. Okay. The adrenal glands. All right, there are two parts. There's a medulla and a cortex. Let's talk about the medulla first. All right, so adrenal medulla, which part is that? Is that the deep part or the superficial part? That's the deep part. So here we have the kidney. Here's that adrenal gland. We're going to be talking about this deep part right here, which is the medulla, not the cortex. So I'm going to pass by these slides right here and show you the medulla. Right here, we see that there's a neuron that goes from the spinal cord to the medulla. So this is what? A neuronal stimulus for release of hormones from the adrenal medulla. And have you ever heard of a compound called adrenaline? Guess where adrenaline comes from? The adrenal gland, and in particular the medulla. So now you know how adrenaline was named, because it comes from the adrenal gland. And what is adrenaline? So if I were to give you a shot of adrenaline, what would happen to you? What would happen to you? What does adrenaline do? When is it secreted? How about you're driving down the 405 freeway and there's no traffic on the road? All right? I know it's kind of funny, but how are you? Kind of in a relaxed state, right? And then all of a sudden it gets crowded, you know, it converges with another freeway and 22 empties into it, you know, and the 710, and all of a sudden you got a bunch of trucks on there and they all want to get in your lane, and you look and you see all these trucks converging on you and you think you're going to get squished to a pancake because they don't see you. What happens to you? What happens to your heart rate? It starts to go up. And your respiratory rate starts to go up. You probably start shaking. You can probably feel your heart pounding inside your chest. Your eyes, there are little muscles inside your eyes. Do you think the muscles contract so that you can hardly see? Or do they dilate so that you can see really well? They dilate. So these are due to adrenaline, the effects of adrenaline. We call that the fight or flight response, so that you can deal effectively with this harmful stimulus that you perceive that's about to happen with you. And fortunately, I can see that all of you didn't get crushed today on the way to work. That's really nice, or school. Okay, hopefully you didn't have to invoke the fight or flight response, but it could have been invoked by stimulus from the brain, which goes into the spinal cord, down to the adrenal medulla, which releases two compounds that we call epinephrine and norepinephrine. Another name for epinephrine is adrenaline. That's the common word for it. And norepinephrine is just another common name for that is noradrenaline, but people usually don't use that one. But you've probably heard of that compound called adrenaline coming from the adrenal medulla right here. So that's part of what we call the sympathetic nervous system. That's part of the autonomic nervous system, and we're going to start talking about that stuff next week. All right, so it's okay if you don't know a lot about that. The adrenal cortex, right, is the superficial part of the adrenal gland. It is stimulated. How is the adrenal cortex stimulated? Let's see if anybody can think back just a couple minutes in lecture. Is it stimulated neuronally or hormonally? Hormonally, because there's a hormone that goes to the adrenal cortex that causes it to grow and to secrete compounds, and that is what? ACTH, adrenal corticotropic hormone. Where does ACTH come from? The anterior pituitary. What causes the anterior pituitary to release ACTH? Is the hypothalamus, because it releases ACTH, RH. Okay? So now let's just talk about the adrenal cortex. It secretes different kinds of hormones that are steroid hormones, kind of like sex steroids, right? A little bit different, but they're steroid hormones. And all steroid hormones come from cholesterol. And we got a couple main classes, right? So even we talked about progesterone and estrogen and testosterone. Since those are steroid hormones, they come from cholesterol. What have you heard about cholesterol? Is it good or bad for you? It's bad. But obviously you need some, otherwise you can't make what? Sex steroids or other steroids coming from the adrenal cortex. And I don't think I know anybody that wants to give away any of those steroids in their body, right? So you need some cholesterol to have proper function. You just don't want to have too much because it can plug up blood vessels. All right, so from the adrenal cortex, they secrete corticosteroids. All right, and corticosteroids have two main kinds. There's mineralocorticoids, which regulate what in your body? Minerals, right? When we get into a physiology class, one of the minerals will be sodium. You'll see sodium is involved right there. Another kind of corticosteroid is a glucocorticoid, and guess what it helps regulate? Glucose in your body, right? So two different kinds of compounds, but these are important. All right, one example of a mineralocorticoid is aldosterone. All right, it's secreted in a response in a decrease in blood volume or blood pressure. All right, and so aldosterone helps you retain sodium. And as a matter of fact, even if you were to eat a lot of sodium, what would happen to your blood pressure? It would go up. All right, so when aldosterone is present, that helps maintain your blood pressure, helps your blood pressure go up because you retain sodium. All right, so I don't think I want you to know much about that other than aldosterone is a mineralocorticoid, right, because sodium is a mineral, and it helps maintain blood pressure. That's the important thing. And where does it come from? It comes from the adrenal gland, but what part of the adrenal gland? Cortex. The cortex, yeah. So if you know that much, that will help you a lot in physiology. All right, glucocorticoids, where do they come from? Adrenal cortex. Okay, and it helps deal with stressful situations because glucose is an important energy molecule. So you need to have that energy available to help deal with stressful situations. Okay, we're almost done. A couple other glands. The pineal gland, located way up in the brain. I don't think I want to pull out a picture to show you that. But it's kind of shaped like a pine cone. The hormone is melatonin, and melatonin is kind of interesting because it helps regulate circadian rhythms. So rhythms, natural cycles in people are very important. A circadian rhythm is a rhythm that happens over a period of 24 hours. Like day-night cycles usually happen over a period of 24 hours. Now, where does that cycle get really disturbed? What part of the planet is that day-night cycle really disturbed? Yeah, like in Alaska, where in the summertime it's like day for 24 hours, and then in the wintertime it's like night for 24 hours, right? So melatonin helps regulate people that experience these really weird circadian rhythms, and it can influence reproductive behavior and sleep cycles and whether you're a morning person or afternoon person, okay? That comes from the pineal gland. And since it can sense photoperiod, sometimes, right, in certain kinds of literature, which is a little bit shaky, sometimes it's called the third eye. Have you ever heard of the third eye? Yeah, because the pineal gland sometimes is called the third eye. And other kinds of animals, it's really, really important, like birds. Like birds, you ever see a bird build a nest in the middle of January? There's no way. At least up here in the northern hemisphere, because their young would typically freeze to death, right? So, and other kinds of animals that are very sensitive, like amphibians and aves, birds, things like that, very sensitive to circadian rhythms, right? It's their pineal gland that controls these reproductive behaviors and nesting behaviors and things like that. We don't think that's too important for people. Okay, pancreas. And the pancreas is in your abdominal cavity. It has both endocrine and exocrine cells. Right? The exocrine part secretes digestive enzymes. And those digestive enzymes work in your digestive tract, but they're made in the pancreas. How do they get from the pancreas to the digestive tract? Since it's an exocrine function. It takes a duct. And exactly right, it takes the pancreatic duct to the digestive tract where they work. All right, the endocrine part of the pancreas, right, is in a little bit different part. It's scattered throughout in little islands. So sometimes we call those the pancreatic islets or the islets of Langerhans. It secretes two kinds of hormones, insulin and glucagon. These both help regulate glucose concentration in the blood. Now, what can you tell me about glucose concentration in the blood? Is it something that maybe you should take seriously, or is it something you don't ever have to pay attention to? It takes seriously, and a lot of people have trouble regulating blood glucose. It can, if it's too high or too low, it can force you into a coma. Okay, if it's too high all the time, it's going to just cause all kinds of problems in your body. It will eventually kill you. It will kill your retinas first, okay, then blood vessels all over your body, then your kidneys. And so a lot of times people with a condition where they have high blood glucose, right, they have to have limbs amputated because they lose vasculature to that part of their body, and they're blind, and they need dialysis or kidney transplants. What is that condition called? Diabetes, yeah. And in particular, diabetes mellitus, which is a kind that's involved with sugar metabolism. So, insulin and glucagon help regulate glucose in your blood so that it doesn't go too high or too low, so it's just right. So what can you tell me about the relationship between insulin and glucagon if you want to have precise control and balance over blood glucose levels? What do you think their action should be? They should be antagonistic to each other, right? Just like the triceps and biceps brachii. Right. So the two different kinds of cells in the pancreatic islets, we have alpha cells that secrete glucagon, and glucagon raises blood sugar levels. It does so because it can tell the liver, which stores glucose, to dump glucose into the blood. So when does your body have a tendency to be low in glucose? Like when you don't eat. When are you in a fasted state? We call that a fasted state. When do you don't eat for long periods of time? Like when you're sleeping. So guess what? Glucagon usually is elevated when you're fasting, like early in the morning, right before you wake up. That tells your liver to secrete a little glucose into your blood so that you have the proper level of glucose in your body. These beta cells right here secrete the antagonistic hormone to that, which is insulin. Insulin lowers blood sugar because it promotes the uptake. It signals most cells in the body to to take glucose from the blood and use it for its own purposes. So a muscle cell has insulin signal. That muscle cell will reach into the blood, take glucose out of it. Okay? And when do you need a signal for the cells in your body to take glucose out of the blood? When blood glucose is what? High or low? When blood glucose is high, then the insulin is secreted so that cells can take it out, and what does it do? Blood glucose levels then decrease back down to the normal range. So insulin is secreted, not when you're fasting, but when you're eating, right? When you're in a what we call a fed state. So the two states you could be in are fasting or fed. When you're in a fed state, insulin is secreted, decreases blood glucose. When you're in a fasted state, glucagon is secreted, right, to raise your blood glucose so that it's pretty much constant. All right, so, you know, it might take you a semester or two to be able to think and talk about it as easily as I am. I realize that, but this is an introduction for you, okay? So, and I think the most important thing that you can take home with this is that concept of antagonism. And we looked at a couple of hormones that work antagonistically to each other, namely parathyroid hormone and calcitonin, in terms of calcium, blood calcium levels. And what are the two hormones for regulating blood glucose levels? Insulin and glucagon. I'm sure everybody's heard of insulin, but you might not have heard of glucagon. And you probably won't hear it again in this class. But in physiology, guess what? You'll hear big time a lot about glucagon. So it's good that you get a little introduction to it right now in a physiology, in an anatomy class. And guess what? Oh, that's almost done. Well, we'll finish up next time, starting with the thymus. I don't have too much more to say about those two, but we can cover it next time. Let's see, the weekend is coming up, so look for the study guide for this chapter this weekend. I'll send an email out to everybody. Okay? All right, so that's it for today. And here is the sign-in sheet. Thank you so much. I'm going to turn this microphone off.